Hey everyone, this is Gary Collins of PrimalPowerMethod.com, and I wanted to introduce you to my new book, Going Off the Grid, the How-To Book of Simple Living and Happiness. Now, I know many people today are looking for a simpler, less hectic lifestyle. I know I was one of those people. So instead of running on the consumer nation treadmill like most of us do today, I decided to take action and go in a different direction and do something about it. This is where my off-the-grid project began. And also knowing that other people were looking for and searching for the same thing, I decided to document my adventure for your benefit. So not only is my book my adventure and how I did it, but I also designed it and wrote it so that you can do it. It's a how-to book, an A to Z from finding your own piece of land to building your dream off-the-grid home. Now, this book is available at PrimalPowerMethod.com. Also available on Amazon and in Kindle format. So make sure to go out there and get one today.
Hey, this is James from StrivePunk.com here with another amazing episode for your ear holes. Today, I went on the Survival Punks Facebook group and I asked for questions and show topic ideas. And out of the 17.5 billion responses, I got a couple good ones. Screw you, Jeff Radke. it was fun in there. I had some good ideas, and I took all the really good ones and I put them into a note so that I can, I guess, start tackling them. Some of them might end up as articles because some things aren't that well received in the spoken format. And some things aren't good for articles either. Like, I didn't really get any how to do things. That, you know, those are definitely need to be done video. And I needed to get a new video up soon. More than likely, I think I know what the next video is going to be. And that is on, let's see, this comes out, I think, the 1st of March, and I believe somewhere in March, sometime in March, I don't know, beginning or end, middle, somewhere in there, somewhere, March 2012, I decided to launch a little blog called Survival Punk. So this coming March 2017 will be the 5-year anniversary of me launching the Survival Punk podcast, or not the podcast, Survival Punk itself. I created it then. So I've talked about it in interviews, and I think I've mentioned it in a few podcasts over the years, that the turnover rate for blogs, podcasts, internet people is pretty high. Five years is a pretty big milestone. I've been doing this for a while, and the podcast itself has been going for a couple years now. Two, three, something like that. Something three, four, maybe. It's, no, three, something like that. We launched it in February a few years ago. So podcast is picking up steam, going along. The blog, it's still chugging along. So thank you for everyone that's listening to this and has continued to listen. Thank you for everything you do. Thank you for, I just had a t-shirt campaign on Teespring. I sold a few, which is awesome. The fact that people bought my design, which is mostly just the Survival Punk logo on the front, and on the back it says "Don't Tread on Punks." That design is now retired. If you are not one of the four horsemen of the Survival Punk, you will never get a shirt. There will not be a fifth horseman. This is not like 1999 WCW wrestling. There will not be a fifth horseman. Me, Matt French, and two others, we have the shirts. And you can't have one. But maybe in the future I'll come up with a new design and we'll try that. Thank you for all the supporting members in the Survival Punk Army. New member Melanie, shout out. And so yeah, there is a survival punk army. If you do dig what I am putting down, then you can go to survivalpunk.com/join the survival punk army, or just click the link. It's in the top. It's probably several places. You can find it. Trust me. I want to make sure that you can find that. And there are several options to join. You can do it for $5 a month, which, by the way, you're thinking, $5 a month, James, that's not even, like, that's a coffee. Like, we won't even notice that. It's like, why would you even care to have $5 a month, James? Because the $5 a month is probably my favorite. Because no one notices it. And it just keeps coming out. And if I could have, like, 1,000 $5 a month people, that would be sweet. So yeah, the $5 month one, which is that reoccurring revenue that I use, now that I use all of the money coming in, should be, for, you know, the show, those usually go for like Facebook boosted posts so that more people can hear my sexy voice talking to you on this sweet podcast. But yeah, and you know, I use it to, Survival Punk Army members bought the new microphone that I'm speaking in. So that really goes, it's not like, okay, so when I, early on in the Survival Punk universe, when I got money from the money from the blog, like if I got AdSense revenue or members or whatever, I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm gonna buy a steak, which was the wrong way to go. When you're starting a business, this is a business tip, use guys. Every bit of money you have that comes into the business in the beginning until needs to go back into the business. It's like making a fire, because this is a survival show and we make fires. When you make a fire, at the beginning, it really wants to go out. That's all a fire wants to do. It just wants to go out. You're like trying to coax it. You're like, no, 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 fire. Come on. Come on. You want to stay going. You want to burn stuff. Burning stuff is awesome. Fire. Fire. But the fire doesn't want to go. You gotta keep feeding it. And you gotta feed it, you know, you start out with the tiniest like twigs, and then you move up, and then you move up. And then there's a point when you're making that fire where it's become self-sufficient, where it self-sustaining, where it doesn't need your constant attention, where it's burning big enough pieces of wood, where it's going on its own, and it's not threatening to go out if you blink wrong. It's the same with a business. So you gotta feed it money. And if you're buying steaks and going on dates, then it's going to die, or it's at least going to languish. And that's what a lot of people, that's one of the mistakes, is like, you know, they fail to monetize or to use that monetization to grow the business. So now I use that money for advertising or for buying things for the business. So yeah, that's your business lecture. I'm going to get done, because God knows I'm not a business genius. I'm still figuring this out, but if I learn it, I'll teach it to you. That's the rules of this podcast. James learns, he teaches. You guys learn, you teach me. That's the way, it's sort of a back and forth. I am not up here preaching to you about the fire stones of hell. It's a community. We talk back and forth. So that's what happens. Today, we are talking about normalcy bias, and a lot of things to do with it. So, combating it, both yourself and dealing with the normalcy bias in others, which, depending on whose those others are, makes it more difficult, i.e. if your wife is sticking her fingers in her ears going la la la, that makes it a bit more difficult to deal with than a stranger that you're having to deal with. You know, that's the way it is. So let's get started. Bring up my show notes here. So normalcy bias. Normalcy bias, just explained by me. I didn't look up a explanation here, but normalcy bias is the tendency to think things are normal. I.e., and I've heard this one before. The house is on fire, and Grandma refuses to believe that the house is on fire because that breaks up her normalcy bias. That's not the status quo. People always want to believe that things will continue the way they are. It's a human trait, or maybe a modern trait. I'm not real sure. I don't know if our caveman ancestors or our more primitive brethren in the world that still live in tribes have this same issue, the same mental fallacy. But people want to believe. People hate change. I don't know if it's new or whatnot, but people hate change. They don't welcome it. They don't enjoy the change. And that's, well, that's one of those things that if you recognize that you are one of those people that hate and or fear change, usually it's fear. Usually it's a fear leads to hate. And then you're on the dark side and you're killing younglings, Cam, which is not good. So if you realize you have this issue, there are things you can do to work on it. I would suggest reading a little book you can pick up. You can probably find it used. You can check eBay. You can look at the used bookstores. It's called Who Moved My Cheese. It's a business book, but there are lessons in it. Or you can just look it up. I'm sure it goes on and on about other stuff, but the story at the beginning of the mice, which I could tell you right now, we're already going to derail. I don't even have a co-host to derail me. I'm derailing myself. So in the story, these two mice live in a labyrinth. They go to the same spot every day, and there's always a pile of cheese there. They eat what they want, as much as they can. They go back to their nest, their room, and they go to sleep. And this has gone on their entire life. Their entire life. They go to the spot with the cheese. They eat it. They go back home. They go to sleep. So that's the way their life is. The cheese is always there. That's just the way that life is. That's their normalcy bias. The cheese will be there. One day they go there. There's no cheese. The two mice lose their fucking minds. There's no cheese. There's always cheese here. There has to be cheese here. They wait. They wait the whole day. Then they go home. The next day, they go back. There's no cheese. One mouse still loses his fucking mind. The other mice is starting to think, well, maybe the cheese isn't here anymore. Maybe it's somewhere else. And, you know, he tries to talk to his friend, who is seriously, like, balls deep in normalcy bias. The cheese should be here. We are doing something wrong. Why did they take my cheese? Why did they do this to me? I am always a victim. My cheese is always being moved. Why don't I have my cheese? And he complains. And he makes himself the victim. And he blames everyone else. He's like, how could they do this? Why would they do this? Yes, which reminds me of a picture I saw that was, you want to fail in life, complain about everything, blame everyone else, and not be grateful. Which is that mouse right there. Definitely that mouse right there. He's failing in life. So the one mice, you know, the day's almost over. They go back home, they go to sleep. The next day they wake up, they go there. There's no cheese. You know, and the smart mouse used the previous day to try to convince his friend. He still won't have none of it. He's like, we just have to wait for the cheese. We've done bad, and the cheese god is punishing us. We just need to show him our faith by waiting. You know, so that mouse is completely delusional. super entrenched in normalcy bias. He just cannot hear the words of the other mouse. The other mouse is like, well, you know, it's been like 3 days now. I'm super hungry. Probably going to die if we don't find the cheese. So he's like, I think we should venture off in the labyrinth to places we haven't been to see if the cheese has been moved. Mouse number one, Mr. Normalcy Bias Mouse, Normalcy Myeth, he's like, no, that's stupid. The cheese is always here. It will come back. So the smart mouse goes off. He starts looking through the labyrinth. And sure enough, eventually he does find some cheese and he eats it. Mouse number one dies. That's my version. I think in reality he did die, much like the original version of the grasshopper and the ant. Mouse number two did not go back and find him and say, "Hey, I found cheese over here. Just come get some cheese, or bring him cheese." You know, it's not the millennial version of the story. Mouse number two wasn't afraid of change. Went and looked, found new cheese. He lived. Mouse number one didn't, was entrenched in normalcy bias. He died. Dead. Dead mousy. So yeah, I think that explains normalcy bias better than anything. And the consequences thereof, and sets the tone for the story. So why do you not want to hold normalcy bias in high regard like that? You'll die. Plain and simple, my friends. You'll die. So that's what normalcy bias is. How do you combat it? How do you deal with it? And I'm going to break this into two subcategories here. How do you deal with normalcy bias in yourself if you recognize that you see some normalcy bias going on there? And how do you combat it in others? Others can be a pretty wide variety. Like I said earlier, it can be close people to you and people you don't really give a shit about. And yeah, we'll have fun with the people you don't give a shit about. So how do you deal with it in yourself? Well, you have to recognize it, you know, much like dealing with an addiction, you have to face it. I, myself, James, I am an alcoholic. I had to admit this before I could really deal with the problem. You know? And it's the same with normalcy bias. It takes working on yourself. You know, and a lot of people just wanna not think about themselves. You know, you have to audit your mental processes. You know, if you come across like a normalcy bias, you have to be willing to accept that it might hurt and it might, you know, your mind kind of reels away from it, but you have to acknowledge it so that you can move on. You know, you have to be willing to mentally audit yourself like that so that you can find these issues that you're having and move on with them. And I don't want to turn this into the survival punk psychology hour. although I did kick around like trying to market myself as a life coach, and people come in with their problems and I throw a tissue box and like, suck it up, buttercup. Anyway, which is exactly what I would do. But with normalcy bias and several other things mentally, you have to audit yourself and find out what's going on there. So for example, you know, things at your work are changing, you know, and you're just trying to put your head down and not think about it. Like that's a normalcy bias there. You expect things to continue status quo. And to be honest, the only thing that stays constant anywhere and at work is that things change. So you have to be willing to either adapt or move on. And moving on is perfectly fine. You know, you don't always have to make lemonade with your lemons. Sometimes you can just Gallagher style smash them with a hammer, say fuck you to the boss and leave. Finding a job isn't that hard. It's really not. Finding a job isn't that hard. Finding the best job in the universe, probably not that easy. Finding a job that gives you money is not that hard. The economy is not shit. There are lots of laborer, minimum wage, low end jobs, and the minimum wage is getting pretty high. Most places don't even pay minimum wage. Hell, you can like walk in off the street and make almost $10 at Walmart now. I'm just saying. And you know, it's getting easy, but you can't get normal. You can't get caught up in the normalcy bias with that. You have to check yourself before you wreck yourself. So, how do you combat it? You have to be aware that it's going on, and that's really it. And you have to think logically and solve the problem. So, yeah, and just sort of that constant auditing of yourself is what will keep you honest there. Because, I don't know, the human mind just wants to slip into normalcy bias, you know? And if you see yourself acting irrational, then, you know, you need to think, what would you tell a stranger to do in that situation, which may or may not be the correct response. Maybe you'll tell a stranger the same thing, or ask a stranger, like, what would they do in that situation? See what an opinion from someone that's not involved in the situation would respond to. That might work. So, combating normalcy bias. Yeah. And so, how would you... And we're gonna deal with some other things in a bit, but how would you deal with others? To be honest, there's only so much you can do. There's only so much you can do. Some people will never, ever break their normalcy bias. And there's just not much you can do about it, you know? People can literally be staring death in the face and refuse to acknowledge that it's breaking their normalcy bias. So in those cases, what can you do? Well, nothing. Cut your losses and move on. And if it's someone near and dear to you, that can be hard. But at the same time, being drugged down in their ship, that's not going to help you or the other people you have to take care of. Cruel as it may sound, rule number one of survival is living. And if you die, you know, game over, you failed. Not good. You know, and there are some people that, you know, you just sort of, you ask thought-provoking questions to get their own mind to work around it. You know, i.e., instead of telling people blah, 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 you ask them questions that make them come to the conclusion that's best for them, that breaks the normalcy bias. And that can work. That can work. You know, instead of saying, you're dumb. Okay, if you attack someone, if you just attack them, automatically, the human mind's going to shut down. This person is attacking me. Your point's invalid. They just don't give shit anymore. And that's a surefire way to just end that flow of conversation. You know, so it's like, you don't like guns. You're a dumb motherfucker. They will never listen to you again. It's over. It's done. You know, probing questions, you know, why do you not like guns? Oh, okay. You're afraid of them. I got you. Okay. So why are you afraid of them? Oh, they're loud and they destroy pretty much everything in their way. And crazy people have been known to use these tools to kill people. Okay. You know, and then you demystify them, you know, give them safety lessons. Like the guns that are 3 feet behind me, they have never just got up and been like, fuck you, and killed anyone. Never happened. And if you're listening to the show and you have guns, I'm willing to bet they've just never gone outside and started popping caps on their own. Just saying, you know, so telling people and attacking them is not the right way to combat normalcy bias. Asking them questions and getting them to answer them and think, getting them to think on their own is a useful tool in this method. And dragging them along. I mean, in the case of grandma's in the house on fire and her rocking chair and refuses to believe the house on fire. Okay. In that one case, yeah, dragging her ass out the house as it burns down will save her life. It just will. But in the more grandiose situations that we deal with here, of oncoming economic collapse or societal collapse or riots, more and civil war and just the bullshit going on, probably not gonna help. Unless it's an acute situation. Getting them to think on their own and work their way through it, that will help. And it can be tedious. It can be tedious, and it's not gonna be a 5 minute one conversation fix. These people are entrenched in it. You know, unless they are starving to death or about to die, you just have to take your time with them. You know, this is and like I said, this is what you want to do for people that you actually care about. You know, coworkers that you don't care about, I guess you can use some of these techniques because, you know, you're not in a rush. There's no need to cram it down their throats and force them through. They're just not. So it's a labor of love, and it's a time-consuming one. You know, you just ask them a few questions, see what their answers are, leave them with something to think about, and I'll talk to you later. Oh, I'm done. They're like, oh, you're done? Yeah, I'm done. Yep, totally done. Which will probably in and of itself blow their minds. They're not used to, oh, sorry about that. there we go. I had a sound go off and I'm like, that's not good. Anyway, they're not used to not being attacked and not having someone's ideology crammed down their throat. So when they have to come to a solution on their own, it's always better. It's like the old movie trope where it's like someone gives an idea and they're like, that's dumb. And then a couple minutes later, they're like, oh, I'm glad I thought of that idea that they just stole from another person. Well, yeah. If someone thinks it's their own idea, that they came to the conclusion on their own, they're always more trusting of it than like you, the outsider. Just is. So there's that. How do you deal with someone that has normalcy bias? I've never had this issue. Like, you know, a lot of preppers, their spouses are not on board. They just think that you, whether it's a male or female, because I know female preppers whose male husbands are not on board, which I always find kind of odd. That, you know, it's when explained logically and rationally, a man should always be like, well, yeah, that makes logical and rational sense. We will become preppers, sweetie. But, you know, with oh, God, this show is going to degrade into the sexist, racist podcast. No, I'm really not, but yeah. So when you're dealing with someone of, you know, the persuasion, so your let's say your wife or husband thinks that prepping is dumb, thinks that you are just a crazy prepper or, you know, on another fad. Oh, they're just, it's just another fad of theirs. They're just going through another thing. This is, you know, it's the new diet. It's the new POGs for you old school listeners. The new POG. Oh, POGs. I'm going to release a limited edition survival punk slammer better than all the rest. How do you deal with it? You know, I can only talk about what I've heard other people do. I've been a prepper now for several years. Several years. And, you know, I have, probably a decade or so. You know, I have not been married this whole time. I'm not married now. I have dated, and I've never kept it quiet. Obviously, I've run a podcast or I've run a website for several years, so obviously I tell everyone about that because that's me. But most people generally tend to think it's pretty neat, especially when it is useful, i.e. we're out and about and there's bugs. And I'm like, God, I wish I had some bug spray. And I'm like, oh, let me grab some out of my bug out bag in the back of my car. There we go. That's cool. I'm really hungry, but I don't want to make any food. Well, let me break a Hormel Complete out of my food storage kit and heat it up for you. Well, that's neat. Yeah. I mean, so maybe your significant other is not as understanding of that. And the same really with, like, say people you work with. There are some people that will think you're crazy. Like some people that will legit think you're crazy. Like, this guy is seriously off his rocker. He's one of those batshit crazy doomsday preppers. You know, and some of these people are the same people that, you know, would be Nazi informants. It would be like, I'm pretty sure that Jeff Radke is a Jew. You should go take him in. Oh, yeah. Let's get that Jeff Radke guy. You know? And those people are scum. You know? And how do you deal with their normalcy bias? You just talk to them as little as possible, and you don't tell them. You know? You know, I guess you have to develop a sense about who you can talk to about it. You know, and I'm very public, so everyone knows about me. But, you know, before, you know, at work or whatnot, and before everyone did know, you know, I was a little bit more selective about it. You know, like, I didn't hide it. I'm not ashamed of it, you know, but you can generally pick up on other people that, you know, say common sense things and judge what you want to tell them, you know, as opposed to just telling everyone. So, and, you know, for other people, it's just good for them to play along. Like, you know, just you, it sort of plays into the whole gray man thing. Like, you don't want to stand out as being that weird prepper guy if you don't have to. I mean, if you think you found another kindred spirit, another prepper, then by all means, start talking about, you know, your food stash and your, you know, your bug out bag and your new knife you bought. But otherwise, just talk to weather, you know, just don't talk to them about it. you know, because, you know, like one of the questions this was based on, like, you know, you tell people at work that your plan is to quit work soon and go live off the grid in a cabin in the woods, and they're going to tell you you're fucking crazy. You know, and if they could, they would report you to someone. They would report you to the, this guy wants to live off grid, he's crazy, you should probably come arrest him because he's crazy. He doesn't want to have a bigger house and doesn't want to have his kids and activities and doesn't want to do this and that and that. And that's weird. But no, it's not. You know? And those people you don't tell. You know, if you work in government, most people will be like that. You know? I have a few friends that work in governmental things. The guy asked this question works in the government. I have a friend that works at the TBI that does gun background checks. And, you know, she's an anarchist. Or at least she's somewhere along the libertarian path there. I don't really know. But she literally can't, like, her coworkers have no idea. I mean, they know she's weird. But they have no idea that, you know, she's as anarchistic and whatnot. There's my alarm again. So, yeah. You know, and I hate to have to put on fake personalities, but there's two ways to deal with people. You have sort of a fake persona just to, you know, just part of the job. You just, you know, they just know you as that guy and you're not, you know, you're just keeping the two things separate. I've sort of always maintained, you know, a work personality and a home personality. People at work generally have no idea what I'm like outside of work. You know, I walk in the door and the work hat comes down and it's like, well, I'm just here to make money and that's it. You know, I'm here to do a task for them to compensate me for said task with monies. And that's it. So there's that. And then the other response would just be fuck off. It just is, you know, you generally don't care about these people other than, you know, the general care that you have for all of humanity, but they're not people you really give a shit about. So, you know, if they're telling you, well, you can't do this. Well, you know what you can do, sir, that tells me that? Go fuck yourself. That's the way it is. you know, it's a YouTube video I just watched, which it's by that idiot Casey Neistat. And I've never seen any of his videos, but it popped up in the YouTube, ad sponsored section. And whatever the title of it was something that really caught my interest. It's like, don't tell us what we can't do or something. Exactly. You tell us we can't do it, and our response, the survival punk's response, is watch us. You know? Although, in some cases, our response is fuck you. It really is. But yeah, I've... I don't know. My general response is anytime someone's like, you can't do this, I'm like, watch, you know, there is nothing that we cannot do. And the motivation of the naysayers, I don't know. I love throwing things in haters' faces and being like, look, you cockless dick monkey, I've done it. So stupid trolls. I love trolls. And this whole podcast was all stolen. It was all this. I'm not even talking off the top of my head. I literally went to a website and I found an entire article on it, and I'm reading it verbatim, word for word. Even the stuff about the Survival Punks group, it's all stolen content. And if you're on the Punks group, you know where that joke comes from. So, yeah. Back to the, so that's how you deal with people you don't give a shit about. People like your wife, you can try to have that real conversation with them to explain why you're doing the things you're doing. Or you can Glenn Tate it and just hide stockpiles of food and do weapon training on the weekends and say you're golfing. I mean, I'm not a real big fan of lying to your spouse, but in the case of doing your job as a husband and keeping your family safe and protected and well fed, I'm okay with it. Yeah. Job number one of, and I am not a husband, but I do subscribe to the old school philosophies in this case and not the new school millennial bullshit. Your job as a husband is to provide shelter and food. Shelter and food. If you fail at those, you fail at being a provider and a husband and a father. I'm sorry. Food and shelter. So if you see hard times are coming and you have food put up and say that you have money stored, you have savings to pay rent or mortgage, or you know, you've paid off your house and you've just not really said anything about it. If you have those two things on lockdown and you've not told your spouse, you've just stockpiled, you know, extra food in the basement and a savings account that your wife doesn't know about, and you lose your job because the company goes away because they hired robots to do your job now, and for the next 6 months, you can pay the rent and feed your family. I don't give a shit that you lied. You're still alive, and you're probably still together. Because most of the divorces that occur are over monetary issues. Because people are not manning up and taking responsibility of their situation. Period. So, I don't like to lie. I don't like to lie at all. But in that case, by all means, keep calm and prep on, my friends. Let's see. Oh, we're doing good on time. Awesome. Are there consequences for following and not following the bias, the normalcy bias that perpetuates the world, the sheep that follow the corporate media that repeat the same bullshit over and over. Are there consequences? Could be. I hate to use this millennial word, but you will be shamed and ostracized if people know that you are different. Hey Jim Bob, why is your car so old? Why don't you have the newest model? I've noticed your house is a little small. Why don't you get a bigger house? Especially if you have a 200 square foot house like me. I love my house. You'll have to deal with that. And their excuses, you know, you could explain things, or you can just tell people to fuck off, or you know. But if people see that you are not keeping up with the Joneses, they will mention it, and it can sort of get to you. It can drag you down, you know, but you gotta keep your eye on the goal here. You know, having that 2,500 square foot house is a liability, except for in the eyes of people that perpetuate normalcy bias. You know, your lawn that takes a shit ton of money to upkeep, to simply be green and be there, is not an asset. Unless you're selling the house and the housing market's, you know, it's a liability, you know. Having that much space that needs that much more heating, liability, you know. Do you have any idea how easy it is to heat and cool my 200 square foot tiny house? I have to replace the air conditioner that went out that was a free one that I found in Mike's my shed that Mike stores his junk in. And it's literally the tiniest air conditioner you get for about $100. It cools my entire house. Usually not even on high either. Usually on like low heat or I guess there's low cool. Heating this house, well, it's, you know, today I didn't have to do anything except for run a fan on me while I was asleep. But you have a giant house, you have a giant energy bill, and you have all your kids and like every activity they can swing a bat at, and you're paying for daycare when they're not there and doing all this shit, and then you're forcing yourself to work a 1,000,000-hour work week. For what? I don't get it. So, are there consequences? Yeah. If people know, people will talk trash about you. But anytime, sage advice here, my friends, anytime you're on the right path and doing the right thing, people will talk shit about you. That's how I know that Survival Punk Podcast is the most electrifying podcast on the internet, because people talk shit about it. And thank you, my friends. Thank you for talking shit about us, because we love it. But you can go fuck yourself. That's the way it is. So yeah, anytime you're doing the right thing, people will talk shit about you. And you don't care. That's a badge of honor. That's a Survival Punk merit badge. People talk shit about me on the internet achievement badge. Are people talking shit about you? Good job. High five, my friend. What are the pros of not following normalcy bias? You're prepared for shit. You're more prepared for pretty much every situation there is. House is on fire. Get the fuck out of house. You know, I see economic collapse coming. Well, let me put my fingers in my ears and just scream, no. Economic collapse is coming. Yeah, it'll hurt. We should probably put up some money and some food. Good idea. Cons? I mean, the pros, you live. And living is awesome. So, that's it. And then, I have a final thought I'd like to share with you. Because we're right there about the end of the show. There's a book series I like. I like fantasy books. A lot of sort of dragon and sword and magic books. And, most of them are just a fun escape. You know, like, I like to read some fiction. And it keeps, you know, if you only do prepper shit, then you'll get burned out. You gotta have other passions and distribute them evenly, or you just get burned out and that won't help you at all. So, yeah, you may do a little bit less, but it's more of a marathon over a sprint. You can just stockpile shit and do stuff a lot and learn real quick, but then you get burned out and then it slacks off and you're not doing anything. So you're going to balance it out. There is a book series, The Sword of Truth, with, there's a character named Robert Rall, and it's by Terry Goodkind, I think. Yes, Terry Goodkind. Great series. About 10 books. It's a bunch of books. And about midway through the series, it really takes on some like libertarian mindset. But early in the book, like the first book, Wizard's First Rule. Yeah. Wizard's First Rule. The first rule, the Wizard's First Rule. So the name of the book is Wizard's First Rule, but the actual rule is no. That's something. Anyway. I forget what it is, but in the book, Richard Rawl, that character, becomes the Seeker of Truth, which is something in the book. I don't want to go long into it, but his grandfather, who was the first wizard, which was a title, like it's a, you get appointed to the role of the first wizard or the high wizard or whatever it was. He taught him that you focus on the solution and not the problem. That's what a lot of people do. They spend all of their energy focusing on the problem. I can't do this, and I can't do that. Instead of, what's the solution? You know? And it's so much wasted energy, literally on nothing. I mean, what does stressing and thinking and focusing on the problem do? Nothing. It just worries you. So yeah, you need to focus on the solution instead of wasting all of your energy on nothing. And with that, this is James from StrawPunk.com. DIY to survive.